Hi, everybody. It's Guys Night here on Box Office Breakdown. That's right. There's just three dudes sitting around talking about movies. We'll be breaking down Denzel Washington's first sequel, narrowly edging out Mamma Mia 2. Here we go again. Plus, we'll have a little flick chart side tangent here. Talk about the Comic-Con trailers and much, much more. Let's do it.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Box Office Breakdown.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Box Office Breakdown. This is the show where three dudes just sit here and look back at the box office that was, and then we
prognosticate
about the box office that lie ahead. I am one of those three dudes, Frank Moran.
I'm number two of the three dudes. My name's the Neil Plumley.
And, of course, making us look great and sound even better, we've got Anthony in the booth.
He's in the booth.
Wait, I need you to introduce yourself again, Frank.
Frank Moran.
There's your lower third.
Oh, right there, everybody.
Nailed it.
Nailed it.
And I'm Anthony Becerra. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show.
Look at that. As usual, we're going to be here talking about movies, but you're probably looking around like, wow, it's just three dudes tonight. That's right. Amy Cassandra Martinez, Cara D. Lane, they are down at Comic-Con. I was down at Comic-Con as well.
What?
But you know what? I cared enough to come back and do this show for you folks.
Oh.
The two of them did not care enough. So remember that, folks.
Oh.
Remember that. I am here for you. And they are not.
You know what that is? You know, that's heart.
That's heart.
That's heart right here, Frank.
There you go. That's like Robert Downey Jr., little heart and soul.
We all feel it.
So we'll be talking about a little bit of the Comic-Con shenanigans. Feel free to follow Amy and Carrie on their respective social media handles. We'll tell you more about that at the end of the show to see what people they talked to and adventures they had while they were down in San Diego.
Very cool.
There you go. Mine was very brief. I was just at the Avengers Infinity War group hug.
I saw pictures of that.
There you go.
Yeah.
I hosted that for a couple days. I was able to give people a chance to come out and share their feelings about the end of Infinity War.
Wow.
Get that off their chest and give them a nice big group hug.
Well, normally you're pretty cold-hearted, Frank, but this must have been quite a warming sensation for you in your chest cavity.
Well, you know, as I'm dead inside,
right.
You know, but I'm like a sociopath. I can feign empathy.
Oh, sure, yeah.
At the drop of a hat, so,
sure.
You know, don't worry. Actually, let's just be, I'll save that before we get to our second film. Then I'll open up my true heart, my true feelings, because it's dudes night, you know? It's just a bunch of dudes, and if you're going to share your real feelings, you're going to share it with a bunch of dudes. But as always, folks, like us on Facebook, give us those 5 stars on iTunes, subscribe to the YouTube channel. While you're there, give it a thumbs up, or 2, or 3, or 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9,
wait,
and a nice even 10.
There's only five.
All right. And of course, we have the chat up and running, so feel free to jump in, share your thoughts about any movies that you've seen recently, or just the box office in general, or anything that we're going to be talking about during the course of the show.
I can monitor the chat.
Oh, look at that. Anthony's going to be monitoring that chat.
First one I want to shout out, John Paul Roman. After he said the girls aren't here, he goes, that's why the show is on time.
Oh.
Well, I won't disagree with that.
Well, actually, in order of appearance in the room, it's usually either myself or Amy.
That's right.
And then the two old fogies.
That's right. Hey, everybody, we're going to talk about movies. I got to put my teeth in.
They need to grease up their canes or something
so
they walk faster.
This face takes a lot of maintenance. I got to get it, pull it up, pull it tight.
Who are you, Brando?
That's it. I could have been a contender. And scene. Okay. We're going to talk about last week's top five. As I mentioned, Denzel Washington's first sequel, The Equalizer 2, narrowly edged out the top spot on the box office, made a little over almost $36 million.
Yeah, just squeezed right in there above Mamma Mia 2, didn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I did not get a chance to see this. You?
I did not.
I wanted to, but as I was at the Comic-Con, I feel like I needed to still... I haven't even seen The Equalizer, so I feel like I want to watch that first and then see Equalizer 2. You know?
Yeah.
So
I'll give you a little bit of context. So I don't know if it's entirely necessary. Doesn't seem like one of those movies where you need to see the first one. I understand. It would be nice.
No, I mean, I feel like the basic gist of it is like, you know, he used to do something. He doesn't do it now. He's doing something a little different, and he's going back to give payback for people that have wronged friends of his.
Right.
So I feel like I could hop into it, but I was like, if I want to get into the whole Equalizer universe, let's go back to the beginning.
Yeah, the Equalizer extended universe.
That's right. So next week, I will see both those films, and then we'll talk about it. But second, ladies and gentlemen, the film I was obsessed about, if you watched last week, to much of the shock, my co-hosts did not believe that I was actually genuinely interested in this film.
I believe it, Frank. I don't understand it, but I will believe it.
Mamma Mia, here we go again. came out from Universal. $34.3 million at the box office. I did make time. Another reason I came back early, folks, I made time to go see Mamma Mia. Wow. Here we go again. Saw it this afternoon. And you know what? If I'm going to go and do the full Mamma Mia experience, I'm going to see it the way the filmmakers intended to, and that's an IMAX.
Go big or go home, guys. Johnny Tsunami.
That's right. Mamma Mia, here we go again in IMAX.
Wow.
Look at that. And boy, was it a spectacle. I'm not going to lie, folks. I finally got my questions answered about Meryl Streep. Great. And how involved she is in the production. I will say that, the pre-film publicity was not lying. She did come back and shoot some new scenes for this film.
Oh, okay.
No spoilers. I guess it's not a spoiler. Her character is dead, so.
It's one of the premises.
Yes, it's a year after her death, and now we're trying to see the hotel has finally been built. We're going to do the big world premiere. Are we doing that for the hotel or for Meryl Streep's death?
Say she's dead again.
She's dead again. There you go.
Twice she's died now.
Yes,
on the
that's
show.
Right. And so then we have to assemble all the cast. But we also do that it's Godfather 2 type moment where we cut back from the present day as well into the past to see how they got to the point where they are today. I will say it is shot and choreographed better than the first film.
Oh, that's
I'll give
good.
It for that. The storyline has – you usually – like Solo, and we talked about this too. Mm. Do I want to see a story that's a flashback of things that we've already been told about already? Right. And this one, I was like, wow, they did a good job of presenting stories that we already knew from the first film, but did it in a good way. And Lily James, really good as the young Donna, Meryl Streep's character. And you know what? Full disclosure, because it's dudes' night. You know, just a bunch of dudes just hanging out. I teared up at the end.
Wow.
I teared up at the end. Mamma Mia, here we go again.
Dude.
I did that, folks.
Good for you.
I did it.
Dude.
I did it.
Damn.
You're punching that toxic masculinity right in the face, Frank.
That's right. That's it got to me. You know, there's more, you know, some characters reunite at the end for a song. And you're like, all right.
You know what? It's always music.
Yes.
It's always music like that gets people there faster.
But you know what? I have to admit, like, watching this, and even the first Mamma Mia too, but it really kind of really settled in on this one, is that I enjoy ABBA music, but not all ABBA music.
Oh,
there
sure.
are some songs in there I'm just like, oof, this is a dog song. I don't really care about this song. Yeah,
I really love dogs.
Yeah, well, there you go, Anthony.
All right, you can watch that movie then.
Yeah, so if you like the first Mamma Mia film, go see this. You're going to have a great time in this. You know, there is... I'm going to say about 99% less singing by Pierce Brosnan in this film.
Praise be.
So.
Praise be.
But he does a really low-key couple lyrics from SOS, kind of calling back his song from the first film, but in a different context. And I thought it was, in that scene, you know what? It got me as well. I got it a little teary-eyed. Pierce Brosnan brought me got me a little weepy-eyed in that moment, too, as
wow.
well.
What?
So I will say I got a little teary-eyed, not once, yet multiple times during the course of that film.
I can't take all these shockers.
That's
right,
because it's dudes night, guys, and we're just opening up our hearts.
I don't like dudes night.
Yeah, man. Get ready, Anthony. We're sharing ourselves. Get ready.
We're all being shared.
That's right.
Tonight.
You're going to open up your heart tonight.
In the movie. I got it.
That's you know that's a particular like unnecessary bit of stunt casting that I needed in this film.
Yeah,
yeah. And you would not know it to look by Cher's face how old she truly is. So she does is required to like maybe show some rhythm and dance in this film, and I feel like her age has made that difficult to do as much.
Sure.
So it's just a lot of standing still and maybe a little upward rocking. But
a little two-step?
That's it. Not even a two-step. It's pretty much I stop
like
and I plant.
And then quick cut someone else. And then one step?
Yeah,
another cut.
There's a moment where she's doing a duet with another character in the film, and she's coming down a set of stairs, but she's holding on to the railing. And I didn't feel like it was more of a character choice in the film. I thought it was like a physical necessity that she needed to do that to make sure she got herself safely down those stairs.
Wow.
Now look at that. So, but anyway, go see Mamma Mia. Here we go again. You'll love it. Lily James was delightful in there.
Lily James is great.
That's
like
right.
Not, you know.
All right. Anthony, go see it, okay? All right, just open up your heart. It's
just
dude's
open
night.
Open your heart, Anthony.
Open your night. Heart to me, Anthony. All right. Coming to number three, Hotel Transylvania 3, Summer Vacation from Sony, $23.1 million. Ant-Man and the Wasp came in at number four with another $16.1 million, another 44.6% drop. So far, its global, its domestic total is $164 $1 million.
Well, it looks like its drop is leveling out now, Frank, which is kind of expected. It sort of had a steep drop early on, and then sort of doing a standard drop from here on out.
But it's coming into its, well, this is its third week.
Third week, yeah.
And it will be out of the top five come next week for sure. So, yeah, it's a shame because it was like, it's not a bad film.
Yeah.
It's like I said, The World on Fire, but it was a pretty solid film. And coming out at number five, The Incredibles 2, also from Disney, another $11.5 million for that.
That's great.
Yeah, it was great, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So that was the past week's top five. Now, one of those films was the subject of last week's box office bet, and for more details on that, we're going to toss it over to Neil Plumley at the box office bet desk.
Thanks, Frank. Here we are at the box office bet desk. I have the numbers in front of me. If you want to know who won and who did not win, this week's box office bet. Now, as Frank mentioned, we bet on The Equalizer 2, starring Denzel Washington, his first sequel. And Frank, if you could tell me one more time, what number did that movie pull in this weekend?
That made approximately
$35.825 million. Great job, Denzel. Proud of you. On to the numbers. We have in last place. Let's start off in last place. We have in last place, Nailed It, Amy Cassandra MTZ, with $22 million.
Beautiful.
Coming up from there, on people who now don't have to or aren't required to watch the movie. And second to last, we have Carrie D. Lane. So Comic-Coners are losing this week, Frank.
That's right.
Just so you know. Carrie D. Lane bet $25 million, followed very closely by Mr. Man in the Booth, Tony B. Tony underscore, with $27 million. And then next in line comes our winner this week. And Frank, it's my honor to tell you that it's me again. Again, I wear the crown of prognosticator of prognosticators. I bet $38 million, just two or three and a half shy.
That's right.
Of the actual number. And then quickly followed by Frank at $39 million.
Look
at
that.
Tight race.
That's, I will, I'm willing to step aside for your greatness. I'm just humble to
be close. I don't ask for people to move for me. I just
expect
them.
That's right. So, ladies and gentlemen, that was last week's box office bet. Amy Cassandra Martinez will be going to see. In fact, I will let her know during the course of the show that she has lost, and maybe we can get a live reaction from her. It'll be very exciting. But that doesn't mean the fun's over, though, folks. We have two films vying for your box office bet vote right there in the chat room if you want to get involved with that tonight.
I'm pumped.
And those two films are Mission Impossible Fallout.
Fallout.
With Henry Cavill and what, Neil? That's right. Those sweet arm
guns. The arm reloading where he's like, mm-mm. He also cracks his neck a little, so it's like.
And Teen Titans Go to the Movies. So, two great films. I'm excited to see either of them. And I will see either of them.
I will see one or the other.
Yes, that's it. But not both. But I'll see either of them.
Find out which one, watch next week.
That's right. So, folks, feel free to start chiming away in the chat about which one of those films you'd like us to do the bet on. But in the meantime, as I mentioned, Carrie and Amy and myself, we were all down there at San Diego Comic-Con. And, of course, that's a great time for a lot of the studios to come down and show their wares, so to speak, to showcase a lot of the new projects they're working on or films that are coming out soon. And, in fact, Warner Brothers made a big splash. Usually it's been Marvel that's come down. They decided not to do a panel this year. They did do a 10-year retrospective of Marvel. But in terms of showing off new content, it's basically kind of radio silent for right now.
Yep.
So, and in fact, actually talking to some people down there, they said thankfully it was great that they didn't, because after they had Thor, Black Panther, Infinity War, and Ant-Man, pretty much just bam, 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 there was really no time for them to, if they had to assemble a panel,
right. I mean,
it would have been rough going, because it was just, they were so stacked in terms of doing that. So, Warner Brothers, though, for the first time, really seemed to come away as true winners of Hall H presentations.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they broke down a lot of their wares, showcased a lot of new trailers. Mm-hmm. We finally got our first look at the Aquaman trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Been hyped for a long time. Neil, what did you think of the Aquaman trailer?
I think, and I kind of was hoping that DC would start moving this direction, sort of like a grandiose, almost silly representation of the comic source material while also keeping it a little serious. What I've been afraid of with a lot of DC movies is after the Nolanverse happened, when Nolan made, I'll break it down like this, when Nolan made Batman Begins, it was pretty great. But he didn't really, I don't think him or the producers really know if they wanted to be super serious and super realistic or if they wanted to be silly. Because they had the ninjas, they had the ninja training, which is really cool. They had like a lot of practical things that Batman was doing, all this tech that was really cool. But they also had like a 100-story-high Wayne train that was going through the city and a lot of like kind of comic booky feeling stuff like that that almost felt a little bit more like Tim Burton Batman movies than a realistic one. Then he shut that all out the window when he did The Dark Knight, and that whole movie was incredibly realistic and grounded in reality, where like, yeah, this could happen. And then again, he sort of started standing on both edges of the river when he did The Dark Knight Rises. Now, since then, these DC movies have kind of struggled, I think, with sort of a tonal pacing. Maybe also directing, but definitely tonal pacing. Where Man of Steel was like a little too fantastical. Like they introduced fantastical elements while also trying to keep it like really grounded. And it felt kind of weird. And then the same thing happened in Batman vs. Superman, also with a failure of directing or editing for that matter. And so I've always just been really put off by how they're trying to emulate Nolan. And the same thing actually happened in the television series. Arrow was emulating Nolan's mood for the longest time, and it really worked until they ran out of serious things to talk about, and then they started to get into some silly stuff, and then the mood didn't fit anymore. Now, that's just my opinion, but that's, you know, this is the feeling that I've been having. With Aquaman, I feel like they're sort of trying to correct a little bit. I feel more like this is happening with Shazam, but we can get to that in a second. But with Aquaman, they're definitely, it definitely has like a dark tone to it, but then they also have like a lot, like a big punch of color. And it looks like there's going to be a decent amount of humor. Now, we didn't see a whole big show of humor, but I think in key moments where they sort of show off Arthur's, what was that line he said? Like, oh, that was, you know, the best pep talk ever. That was great. So it seems like he's a little sarcastic, which is great. And I kind of want that to keep going. Because in Justice League, he was just very, just like one tone and kind of unappealing, at least to me.
Oh, when he'd scream all excited, well, that cyborg throws him. Yeah!
Oh, yeah, this is great, yeah. When they jumped out of the airplane, that looks like a good amount of fun, and just, you know, that's what we all want. And Aquaman is going to be silly. They're going to be riding sea animals that are way too big. They're going to be fighting, it looks like they're going to be fighting Black Manta, who looks really cool.
Those couple sequences of Black Manta in there looks, I mean, it's just so faithful from the comic book source material. And I mean, when you get those eye beams shooting out and blowing up stuff, I'm like, all right, I'm in.
Now, this might sound a little cheesy, but the thing that really got me was the music choice. Because it's a track that they licensed from Two Steps from Hell, which if you guys don't listen to Two Steps from Hell, you can find them on Spotify and probably other streaming services too, but they are fantastic. Guillermo del Toro uses the same track that they use in the trailer on his show Troll Hunters. This is on Netflix.
Yes.
And it's actually, he used it like on two occasions. It's one of my favorite tracks they ever did. And I've been like, I write to that song a lot when there's like an epic moment that I'm trying to write down. And to see that come out in a trailer again, I'm like, yes! Because then all I want to do is watch trailer reactions and watch people freak out during, like, the big orchestral swells and stuff. Because I'm like, yeah, that's what it's there for, bro. So I really enjoyed the music choice. I thought that was fantastic. If only they could score something like that for the movie, that'd be great. But the action looks cool. I thought the tone of the trailer, the pace of the trailer was pretty good. It was definitely a little silly, but I'm trying to just, like I said, embrace the silliness. Try not to be too dark, DC. And I hope that turns out like that.
Fingers crossed for that. Anthony, did you, of the many Comic-Con trailers released over the weekend, what particular caught your eye?
Oh, I thought we were talking about Aquaman.
Wait, if you want to talk about Aquaman as well, feel free.
Okay. I'm somewhat kind of on the fence with Aquaman. Because, like, I didn't like the beginning of it, the opening, like that kid scene in the aquarium kind of like turned me off, and kind of like the above water, believe it or not, the less CGI there was, I didn't like it. And then once they got underwater, I was like, this looks amazing. Like once they got underwater, I was like, I am digging this. And also the tone felt a little like not sure where they're finding their footing with it too. But I did enjoy that last stint at the end where he jumps out of the plane and he's like, wahoo. I was like, that was pretty cool. So overall, I'm like on the fence, but I'm leaning more towards like, I really appreciate the CGI, believe it or not. A guy who like usually hates it, like seeing that stuff underwater, I was like in shock and awe. I was like, that looks really good. But yeah, so far I'm gonna have to wait and see, because also Momoa's acting can be a little hit or miss. You know, he's like, is he really an actor or is he just a personality? Like, are you going to see Aquaman or are you going to see Jason Momoa be Aquaman? You know, like people have to really ask themselves that, because like don't lie to yourself.
It kind of reminds me of Dwayne Johnson a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Is he an actor or is he Dwayne Johnson?
Exactly, because people like love like the stunts. People know that he like throws axes at walls and drinks beers with people and like he wears top hats and everything. Like he has a cool personality, but can he act? Questionable.
He wears top hats?
Oh yeah,
that's crazy. Look at that guy. Of course, and now I'm even more enamored. I've got to go see this movie. My only worry right now is the fact that it might suffer from too many villains, because you've both got Ocean Master, his half brother, and then you've got Black Manta.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Hopefully they do a great job of balancing that. But usually when you throw in too many villains, it can get a little. Neither one served very well, and you kind of feel like, well, these are weak villains for this guy.
Well, they did a good job with it in Spider-Man 2. Sam Raimi's Spider-Man 2 with Harry, who found out what was going on, and then Doc Ock as like the main villain.
Yeah. Oh, that's very true. So if that, if it wanted to just kind of use his more of a little accent, then that could be great. But I mean, Black Manta, he's just, I want to see more Black Manta. Just make Ocean Master just kind of the accent. Yeah.
Yeah, I it kind of feels this way, and I sort of hope it is, but I hope the Ocean Master stuff is sort of just like done by the first act. I think that's going to be him getting back into it. And then Black Manta seeing, oh, hey, there's an opening here because there's distress in the capital or in Atlantis or whatever. Siege the palace.
Yeah. Another one of the superhero films I got showcased was Shazam, the much talked about.
Shazam!
Yes, long in development film from Warner Brothers as well. So that got his big debut. There's been a lot of speculation. How does Zachary Levi look in the costume? Is he going to be a good fit for to play Captain Marvel? What did you guys think?
I think he looks a little goofy, but honestly, from top to bottom, I dig it. I dig the whole thing. I like how... like I was just ranting about earlier, I like when DC embraces the silliness, because it's baked into all of their storylines. As long as they're not doing it like in a Schumacher kind of way, but, just like a little bit. And so that's what I like about this. So, like, he looks kind of goofy in it, but I think when he starts like fighting someone, it's really going to play. Because he's also supposed to have like this childlike innocence. So I think that's sort of what they're going for. And for me, I think it hits.
Anthony?
I gotta say that I am so in. I don't care how goofy or dumb he looks. I look past a lot of things in that trailer. I'm like, this is just fun. Like, this is just a fun movie. And like, once I saw Zachary Levi portraying like how he's a kid as like being a kid as Zachary Levi, I was like, this is so hilarious. And like, it was just spot on with like the casting for sure. I was very questionable like when I first heard about it, and now I'm just like, dang, like this is blowing up in my face, and I love it. And so, like, yeah, I honestly can't wait to see that. And then that last, like, towards the end of the trailer, when you finally see him transform when it's Billy, and he says Shazam, and he becomes Zachary, I'm like, oh, that was pretty dope, I gotta say. So I'm more on board for that than Aquaman. So, yeah.
Nice. I guess my concerns are it seems to be being more faithful to Geoff Johns' reinterpretation of the character when they did the New 52. And they redesigned the costume. I'm not a huge fan of the redesigned costume, where they've given him the hood as opposed to just like his really cool one-sided cape, which I've always loved for Captain Marvel. And just some of the changes where, what happens with his foster family and how he kind of shares the power with the rest of the siblings. Yeah, I don't know if I like those changes to the origin, but I'll keep an open mind when we go to the film and see how it's pulled off.
Yeah.
So we also have from Warner Brothers, we had Godzilla King of the Monsters. With plenty of monster action.
Plenty of, almost too much monster action, if I'm being honest.
Is there ever anything, such thing as too much monster action?
Well, when it gives away too much of the movie, yeah.
I understand. But I feel like this is just getting your appetite whetted for what I'm really excited about, and that is for the Godzilla King Kong film.
I don't know how it's good. I mean, I guess we have to see King of Monsters, see how it plays in, but honestly, it seems like they keep talking about, like, the Titans and how... like, they've been around forever and they all need to do whatever. Are the rest of the Titans, except Godzilla and all the other monsters, going to die? And the only thing left is going to be King Kong? Or is King Kong going to need to team up and help fight the rest of the Titans? Or
we're going to have to find
out. I guess we're going to find out.
That's right. We also have the sequel to Fantastic Beasts, The Crimes of Grindelwald, as well. And, yeah, that seemed fine.
You guys a fan of that stuff? I'm not. I'm just asking. Sorry.
Oh, like Harry Potter?
No, it was specifically the Fantastic Beasts.
I thought the time period was really cool and a nice change of pace from what we'd seen before in the original Harry Potter films. I have to admit, the thing I liked least about that film was losing Colin Farrell to reveal Johnny Depp. I felt Colin Farrell was great, and I didn't see a reason to do that bait and switch.
Ooh. Yeah.
I didn't like it.
Yeah, so. Me neither. Also, I'm not a huge fan of Johnny Depp. I will say this might be one of his better roles, though. I don't know if I've seen him as, like, an actual, like, almost like a whole time, like, menacing villain that we're supposed to, as an audience, like, sort of hate against.
That's true. More like the anti-hero, like, with Captain Jack and stuff.
Yeah, well, that and also Sweeney Todd and, you know, those sorts of characters. Yeah. But I don't think I've seen him as, like, an actual antagonist to our protagonist, which is interesting. And he looks like he's going to show up for it. He may, while shooting, be, like, coked out of his mind for it, like some reports have been saying, but whatever. But I will say one of the things that I really liked was when they show like a young Newt Scamander in class and he has to face what he's afraid of. And they're like, oh, what Newt's afraid of more than anything is, he's like, working in an office. And I'm like, that says two things. One, he obviously wants to travel around and not be tied down to anything. But two, he's not afraid of anything. Which I'm super excited to see how he faces off against Grindelwald, who is scary as hell, if he's just going to be like walk in and be like, no, it's okay, I'll handle it. You guys stay over here. Yeah. Like, I'm excited to see if that's part of the story.
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
And I'll be curious to see how Jude Law pulls off a young Dumbledore.
Yeah.
Another big film, especially if you're into the superhero genre, was the release of Glass.
Yeah.
As well, to go get a first look at that.
Oh, man.
Ooh, Anthony, seems like you're excited about that trailer. Oh,
yeah, my booth.
I love that trailer, I gotta say. It was fantastic. No, I've been looking forward to this ever since I saw Split, the ending to Split. Spoiler alert. But yeah, and then also I went back and rewatched Unbreakable, and it's just like such a solid film. My God. And and just seeing Samuel L. dressed all in purple in his, oh my God, just like I screamed out Glass and my mind shattered, and it was fantastic.
Beautifully done, Anthony. Beautifully done.
Beautiful.
Neil?
I've been looking forward to this movie since I saw Unbreakable back in, what was that?
2002?
2000, yeah, I think. I think it was 2000. I think Sixth Sense was 99, and this was, in Unbreakable was, well, maybe it was 2002.
I got you. I'll look it up.
All right. Thanks, Anthony. I think I've said it on the show here before. I definitely said it on Twitter. My definitive vote for the best superhero movie ever is Unbreakable.
Released in 2000.
It is. Thank you. I thought it was. It might be the most exciting superhero movie, but it is definitively, in my opinion, the most well-made movie on the subject of a superhero. Where it's like a superhero protagonist who actually have like powers and stuff.
And a weakness to water.
And a weakness to water.
That's right.
Swing away,
and so I've been looking forward to like seeing if, I mean, I didn't ever think that he would go back to David Dunn and see what he was up to. So that reveal at the end of Split was just mind-blowing for me. And so I was so excited to see this trailer. And I don't know if you've seen my Twitter, but I've been asking M. Night probably once a week when we can see the trailer.
I've seen
since
that.
Probably April. I'll just be like, hey, M. Night, what's up? I hope you're doing well. When are we going to see a trailer for Glass, though?
And did he say? Did he respond?
He never responded, but that's fine. He's a busy man. Mm. Man, just like the part where it's like Laura Paulson, she has her little voiceover, and then it switches to Samuel, and he's just like, and yet, and like starts going down like how she's wrong, and I'm like, ooh, buddy. This is going to be good, and especially the end. Oh, man. They teased someone who saw this, people who saw the trailer at CinemaCon said that some of their favorite parts of the trailer were the very end, where just an off-screen voice says, what's your first name? Mister. Last name? And then just, like, the title. And yeah. I was like, buddy, that is so good. I
had to walk away.
So I'm very amped.
Anthony had to walk away.
I'm
like
very
that.
Excited for that movie. I think it's going to be great.
Real quick from the chat, I like this this comment by Zias B. Liu. He goes, you got Nick Fury, Professor X, and magic. Because Anna Taylor-Joy is supposed to be magic in the, what was it? The oh, man.
New Mutants.
New Mutants, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was pretty funny.
Man, it should be cool. Can't wait to see that. So, you know, wait, I'll wait to January.
I can do it.
Can you do it?
Yeah, it'll hold me over for Captain Marvel.
That's true. I mean, once January kicks off, it's going to be pretty rapid fire.
Great, ooh, yeah. Great way to start January 2019.
Oh, you know? Come on, oh, right? Man. It's like a birthday gift to me.
That's true. I mean, you see something like that because, you know, I guess like with Split 2 and a couple other films in the past few years, January has been kind of assumed, much like September, kind of a dumping ground. But there's been some films out there that these past few Januaries that have kind of tweaked that and said, no, if you put out a good film, you can make some money.
Yeah, like I've been saying, like a few weeks ago, I said that Marvel seems to be shifting a little bit early in the year as well. They did Black Panther this past February, mm-hmm. Captain Marvel in March. So there's already sort of like some space carved out in the earlier months where it's not so much of a dumping ground. Obviously, and also Jumanji, the sleeper hit. I don't think they understood that it would have so much play in January, but then it ended up crushing it mm-hmm. that whole month. So I think it's a good move to put a movie like that where it could do good, but they're not really like they might not be counting on it. Obviously, Blumhouse knows what they're doing. Yeah. It's distributed by Universal Picks, but I think it's a good time to release it for sure.
Yeah, because there's never any time that anybody doesn't want to go see a movie.
Yeah.
So if you put out a great movie and you do it right, people will go see it in mm-hmm. September. They'll see it in January. So, ladies and gentlemen, of course, as I teased also at the beginning of the show, we'll do a little quick round of the flick chart.
Oh, you want to do flick charting?
Yeah, we'll do a couple, because I said that we'd do it, so we'll do a couple rounds of the flick chart. This is Neil Plumlee's passion.
It's so much fun. It's so much fun. If you guys don't know what Flick Chart is, we're not sponsored, but it's a website. You can go to www.flickchart.com. You make a little profile, and then it just gives you two random movies. Two random movies. They could be completely different genres. One could be the remake of another. It's completely randomized. There's those two movies, and then three buttons where it's I haven't seen this one, I haven't seen this one, or I haven't seen either. And so then if you have seen the two movies, you just tap on one, and then it remembers. And over time, as you rate more movies, it comes up with a definitive top 20, actually definitive top everything for all the movies that you've seen. You can even type in a movie and search for it and then just rank that one against 10 of the movies on your list to get it onto the list where you think you need it, at least. So I've been doing this for about 2.5 years now.
That's true.
So I have a lot of movies in my flick chart. But if you guys want, we can play a little.
Yeah, we'll play a couple rounds. Why not?
All right. So first up here, we have Star Trek 2009 against A Night at the Roxbury.
Oh, Star Trek.
Which is a better movie?
So
it has to go like this. You can either, you have to pick a way to play it and stick to it. You either pick what is a better made movie or what movie would you rather watch?
I'd rather watch, because, you know, I'm not a fan of Chris Kattan. Yeah, you know, The Night of the Roxbury is one of my least favorite sketches on Saturday Night Live, and that's right. When I was like, how's it going to get blown out for this long? So I didn't really enjoy that film as much. I'd rather watch Star Trek, the 2009 version.
It's really, I love that one. I love Star Trek 2009. But I have a sweet spot in my heart, because I saw Night of the Roxbury when I was growing up, and I was like, that's the funniest movie I've ever seen in my life, just because it was a completely different type of humor.
Yep.
So I'm going to pick Roxbury.
All right, well, you're wrong, but go ahead.
All right, let's see what's up next here. It's loading.
I like it. Yeah, certainly J.J. Abrams and everybody involved did a great idea, like to honor the original canon of Star Trek, but still do a whole new spin on everything. Mm-hmm. That was a good way to get around all those big Star Trek fans. Like, why are you eradicating all our years of history?
Yeah.
But, Neil, what's next?
I'm trying to get it to show up.
Oh, all right. You get it to show up.
No, I'm trying to reload the page.
Oh, okay. and it looks like we're going to be moving ahead with the original cast involved with Quentin Tarantino's version of a Star Trek film. Whenever mm-hmm. that happens, Zachary Quinto was saying, "Oh yeah, if and when that film takes off, it would be with the reimagined cast as opposed to maybe a Next Generation movie or something like that."
Right.
So we'll see what happens.
All right, here we go. We have A Charlie Brown Christmas or The Matrix.
Oh, come on. Christmas.
No, I got to go to The Matrix.
It's Matrix.
Yeah.
You have to. It invented shit.
Matrix.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. I haven't seen that. One of these is actually a comedy special. Zach Galifianakis, Live at the Purple Onion. I haven't seen that. I think I've seen clips from it. I haven't seen the whole thing, so I'm going to skip it. Okay, here we go. Terminal.
Okay.
Tom Hanks, 2004.
Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Or Glory, 1989. Matthew Broderick. Denzel Washington.
I think I'd have to go with Glory.
Me too. I felt the same way.
Yeah.
I mean, Terminal's good. I did feel a little bored while I was watching it. But, I mean, Glory was just... I didn't even, like, hear about it until I was doing, like a history project in high school. And my friend's like, oh, we should watch Glory to get some research. Because it's all, like, a true story. And I'm like, what? What's Glory? Watched it, cried, loved it. Fantastic movie. Really great story, too.
Yeah.
All right, this is going to be fun. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure or The Number 23.
Oh, that's a Jim Carrey movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going with Bill and Ted's.
You have to go with Bill. I would choose Bill and Ted over The Matrix, probably. Maybe not.
I couldn't go that far.
Okay, Home Alone 2, Lost in New York or Atonement?
Oof. Okay. Just because of personal preference, I'd rather watch Home Alone 2 than Atonement again. Yeah.
Atonement's a tough watch. I think I'm going to choose it for the long take they did on the beach of Dunkirk.
Okay.
Because that was really well shot.
Good old James McAvoy in that, in that joint.
In that joint. All right. We have 300, which I tell you is going to lose to Pulp Fiction.
Oh, all right. I go Pulp Fiction. I can't disagree. Even though 300 is fun to watch, but yeah, I mean, Pulp Fiction just, fractured narrative and stuff that really influenced a lot of the films.
All right. Do you want to do a few more?
No, we should probably move on.
All right.
That was our flick chart moment, everybody.
Flick chart moment.
Yes, because it's dudes just hanging out being dudes. And we're going to talk about flick chart. You know, that's just what dudes
flicking
do.
Flicking things.
That's right. That's right, Anthony. We're flicking things. Is that what you're doing in the booth? Oh, all right.
Oh, okay.
Oh, interesting.
No, I mean, I'm flicking buttons.
Okay, sure, buddy. All right. So, as we get ready to do our next week's box office prediction, we'll do our next week's look at our top five. Now, of course, we're adding Mission Impossible, as well as Teen Titans Go, Mission Impossible Fallout, I should say, as well as Teen Titans Go to the Movies. Now, the Mission Impossible films, so far they've made, the original did $45 million, Mission Impossible 2, $57 million. Three did 47. Ghost Protocol had a early release, so it only did 12.7 for that, but did much better when it first opened wide. Rogue Nation did 55 million, so it's building. And this one, just an early buzz on this says it's one of the best action film of the year.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing.
Yes, so I'm very jazzed about that. So where do you see both that and Teen Titans Go to the Movies falling into our top five next week?
Oh, I see Mission Impossible right at the top. I see it number one.
Yes, absolutely.
I see that number one, and then I'll see Teen Titans at a close number two to The Equalizer. I don't know if Teen Titans will pull in a whole bunch.
But it has been getting so much press, though.
That's true.
They've been pumping that out like crazy. I think it has a chance to take number two, and I would love for it to take number two. Just because, you know, it's a fun show to watch, and it'd be cool to see them get some cinematic success too.
Right.
So in my heart, I'm going to go Mission Impossible because that I'm in the tank for. But then Teen Titans Go, and then I'll just go Equalizer, Mamma Mia, Hotel Transylvania.
Just bump them all down.
Yep.
I think you're right.
Yeah. And the reviews coming out of Teen Titans Go to the Movies are really positive.
Yeah, that's I've been hearing all that like all weekend. There's some people. Some friends of mine there are down at Comic-Con, got some early screens of it, and they're like, this is fantastic. It's a great movie, from what I've heard.
It's tough because the original series, which was, you know, I don't want to say super serious, but more of a faithful take from the source material. Right. People love that, but then it ended, and then they brought it back more in this, like, 12-minute kind of very jokey, a lot of bits kind of short-form storytelling. And people, just because of that, were just initially turned off. Like, you're taking this property that really loved, and now you're treating it like a joke.
I got to say, that's how I felt with it, too, because I personally went through that myself. Because I feel like the original Teen Titans was the one that deserved the film. If it were to get a big screen, it would have been that film or that series. But it was a different times back then when they canceled it and everything.
True. And to anybody that feels that way, I would say give the show a watch. Watch several episodes, just get kind of, and I think you will appreciate the different sensibilities of the show and feel it just as enjoyable as the original.
They're very self-aware, which is a very applicable sense of humor for the Teen Titans.
Absolutely. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, as we're getting ready to wrap up here, we've got our box office bet to do. The chat, I know I haven't been looking too much in the chat because I've been, you know, just staring into Neil's eyes this show. What's up? What are we looking at here in terms of...
Last time I checked, there was a tie, I believe.
Ooh, all right. This is intriguing.
If someone in the chat can give us an update on the number, please.
Let's see. In terms of that, we've got Zias saying a Mission Impossible, Equalizer, Teen Titans Go at 3, Hotel Transylvania, and then Mamma Mia. A steep drop.
Wow.
Zias is predicting a steep drop for Mamma Mia. I don't think so. I think it's... That's the type of film I think is going to stick around for a little bit. There's not really any other kind of other competition to it right now.
It's a bold move, Cotton. Let's see if it works out for him.
And Paul Jones says Mission Impossible, Teen Titans Go, Equalizer, and Mamma Mia at number 4, and then Hotel. Yeah, pretty much what we were saying.
Ken Jack says Mission Impossible 1, the poll.
Well, look at that. Intriguing. All right, Mission Impossible Fallout.
Run down those numbers first again. What did the other ones make?
Oh, well.
The last two or three?
There you go. We've gone from starting at number 1, 45, then 57 for number 2, 47 for number 3. I'll skip Ghost Protocol because that was an earlier release for that. But then 55 for Rogue Nation. So 55, wow. Yeah.
Big old jump.
The buzz around this movie is crazy, too.
Yeah.
You got to, like, factor in that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a fun ride, everybody. And it's coming out on a buttload of screens. Everybody, that's
ooh,
a mathematical.
Oh right, the buttload system. Yep. Of course, I forgot.
It is coming out on. Let me tell you exactly the number here. Do 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 do. It's coming out on 4,000 screens. Teen Titans Go will be on 3,000 plus.
4,000.
Yeah.
Well, they're really pushing it.
No, and deservedly so. They got themselves a hit. So. Mm-hmm. Of course, folks, as we do the box office bet, you know how it works. We're all going to bet on what we think the opening box office total is going to be. The winner gets to bask like Neil Plumley's done twice so far.
What's up?
Back-to-back wins, being the prognosticator of prognosticators. The loser, like Amy Cassandra Martinez. We'll have to go see the film.
Nailed it, MTZ.
And tell us all about it. And just because you think it's just dudes night. It's just going to be three dudes just making a box office bet.
Dids.
No. Nah. Don't be so sure. I actually reached out to Amy and Carrie down in San Diego and said,
no
hey,
way.
Oh, way. I said, give us your box office bet numbers. Oh, you got it. So we got box office bet numbers for both of them as well, too. So you've picked Mission Impossible Fallout. I've got numbers for them from Amy and Carrie.
Have you already read them?
What?
Because I don't think you're allowed
I cannot
to bet.
Remember. I cannot remember them. So. Nope.
Sure.
I can. I know. Because I've won them.
It's a good call.
Yep. I can't remember them, honestly.
Do I still go first?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it. I'm going with a solid 67 million.
Ooh, I like that.
67.
Okay.
I was going to hit 70, but I was like, nah, let me backtrack a little bit.
Well, you know who did get into the 70s? That's me with 75.
Ooh.
Oh, very nice. Well, I went with a positive 70 because I was like, yeah, I want
dang.
This to be big.
Okay.
But let's
either
go
way,
down.
I'll watch it, actually.
Carrie Lane, she went with $64 million for Mission Ooh. Impossible. And Amy Cassandra Martinez, MTZ.
Nailed it.
She went $50 million. Ooh, not That's much faith.
Low. Does not have faith in
so
the crew.
So it's all nailed it and Neil. 50 versus 75. Who's going to see it? It's going to be Amy.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
For sure.
I can't imagine this thing doing...
That being said, I do actually have an invite to a Thursday screening down at the place I work. We're clients of a networking company. They invited all of us down to go see it, and they rented out the Arclight Hollywood. So we're going to be heading out there and seeing it on Thursday night.
No, nice. I for some reason, I didn't see the rest of the box office breakdown team being considered for that screening.
Yeah,
but that's cool. I mean, whatever, bud.
They're not as cool.
Okay.
Message they don't have received. A Killing Joke pocket tee t-shirt.
No, that's very true. Ladies and gentlemen, this is going to do it for Dudes Night right here.
Dudes Night.
Yeah, Bunkers and Breakdown Dudes Night. But as always, folks, like us on Facebook. Give us those 5 stars on iTunes. Subscribe to the YouTube channel. Give it a thumbs up while you're there. Or 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. And as always, if you're watching the show after we've streamed live, you know, Neil, what can they do?
They can comment down below.
And because it's Dudes Night, Neil, do you have like a dude's question?
I sure dude.
Ha ha!
My question for y'all is, if it's not Unbreakable, what is the most well-made superhero movie. Maybe not the best, but the most well-made.
All right, I got it. And as always, folks, thanks to everybody for chiming in on the chat. We couldn't do the show without you, for sure. You make the box office bet happen.
Also, we love you. Week.
Yes. And so if you want to stay in touch with any of us, even after the show's off the air, Anthony, where can they find you, good sir?
Hey, I was muted. You can find me everywhere at TonyBTony_ on Twitter and also Instagram at TonyB, the letter B, Tony_. And you can also catch our show, Horror Movie News, on the Popcorn Talk Network as well every Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thank you so much for that plug.
You know, Anthony, because you do such a great job for us, you should actually also give that extra plug for yourself because you got a hot interview happening tomorrow.
Yes, but it is a pre-tape. But I guess I'll tell you guys. I mean, it's a pre-tape. I'm gonna air it when the movie comes out, the week of the movie comes out in August. But I am gonna be interviewing the directors of Turbo Kid, who just are releasing in August again. The Summer of 84. It's the director's film collective named RKSS. That stands for Roadkill Superstars, who did Turbo Kid, which I adore.
Look at that!
Cool.
Sounds exciting.
That sounds like fun.
We'll be on the lookout for that when it shows. Popcorn Talk in August.
Just follow me and you'll know.
No, what a treat. Neil?
Well, if you guys want to see what I say, you can follow me at places where people are found at the Neil Plumley. That's TheNeilPlumley.
You can follow Carrie D. Lane at Carrie D. Lane.
Yes, you can.
Yes, on all those social media handles. And Amy Cassandra Martinez. Neil, what is her handle?
At Amy Cassandra MTZ.
Nailed it.
And folks, you can follow me at Happy Go Jackie. All right, that's going to do it for this exciting Dudes Night. We'll be back here next Sunday night with a full panel. You know, less of that, you know, that dude talk. We're gonna share the
less of that locker room talk.
But until then, folks, go see some movies. Do your own stunts. That's what Tom Cruise does.
That's pretty good.
Works for him. Like, we'll see you next week, folks. Go see some movies!
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network. The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.